Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with Al McDonald, the amazing co-host that has been with me for quite some time now. Al, how's your day going?
It has been quite some time, hasn't it? It's hard to believe that we've been doing this as long as we have and had as much success in meeting some great people, and looking forward again to another great guest today, and always excited to hear what people have to say. Learn some new things.
Yes, hard to believe we're approaching episode 200, but you know, it's been 200 conversations or almost 200 conversations with amazing people. And I've said it before, one of the great things about the podcast is the people that we get introduced to on a regular basis. And our guest today is no exception. Joining us is Roy Wehner. He is a Toronto-based entrepreneur who is building Townish, a platform for planning and organizing team events. Townish brings teams together for local experiences by partnering with villas, hotels, chefs, caterers, as well as professional workshops and learning and development experts to help teams succeed. Roy started his career in finance, but has since transitioned to his true passion, which is startups. Roy, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Great to meet you guys. For a second time, but yeah.
For a second time, yeah. No, we had such a good conversation the first time. We knew we were going to do a podcast together. But Roy, I got to ask right off the bat, Townish, where does the name come from? Like, how did you come up with that?
The original idea was to bring people to local towns. So kind of like, I live in the city, most of my friends live in the city, and we wanted to bring people to like small towns in Ontario, small towns in the US as well. So we thought of like a word that kind of like connects the town with something like very, you know, cute and special. So I came with the name Townish. It was even before I met my co-founder, Cam. And then when I met Cam, I told him, like, you know, we can change the name. But he said, no, I love the name. We have to keep it. So it's just like, I think, very like memorable name. So like, we just decided to keep it. And then, like, I think people love it. So yeah.
It is. It's memorable, but it's almost, how would I describe it? It's almost familiar. It's warm.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about Townish, it does, to me, it does suggest bringing people together. So on that note, and I mean, I did a little bit of your bio in the intro, but I want to dive a little bit further into where did Townish come from and why? Because you and I had such a good conversation in our first call, and I hadn't really thought of, oh, that makes a lot of sense. But where did this all come from?
Yeah, so I would say it starts with mostly with my previous job, which was in a Toronto-based company called Platters. It used to be called Platters, now it's called Thriver. And I've been working in Thriver. I worked at Thriver for like 4 years. Free Townish. And Thriver was kind of like, I would say, the easiest way to explain is almost like Uber Eats, but only for corporates. So we connected companies to restaurants in the days pre-COVID, where employees used to go 5 days to the office. Employers used to feed them in many cases 5 days a week. It was very successful. And I was there for like 4 years, and we scaled the business. We grew it to like 200 employees. We grew it to 12 different cities in the US. And then COVID came, and COVID affected the business very dramatically. Obviously, a lot of like uncertainty. We had to lay off a lot of employees, but we didn't know when's COVID going to end, if it's going to end, if employees are going to go back to the office. At some point, I think we understood, I at least understood that like things not going to go back to the way they were, and that employees not going to go back to the office in the same structure they used to go to the office, which is 5 days a week. And not everyone that works for a company in Toronto are going to live in the GTA. And at this point, I actually decided to leave, and I decided to start my own thing, but I actually didn't know what. But I was very passionate and curious about like the future of work and how things are going to shape up. And what was interesting for me is that what I've seen is that a lot of companies, not a lot, but I would say like a lot of like very sophisticated companies were working remotely even pre-COVID. And a lot of companies like Zapier or like GitHub or like some, you know, like some of the most successful startups in the world, started to work in a way that was very much about like async collaborations, no offices, everyone is remote, everyone is coming together for like offsites a few times a year. And this kind of like sparked something in me, and I started like to kind of like understand that maybe it wasn't COVID that created remote work. It was the internet that created remote work. And the fact that all of us are working in a very distributed way, all of us are working on the internet almost today. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of people that, like, if you work for, like, Amazon or for, like, Loblaws or whatever, you have to, or, like, hospital, you have to be in person. But, like, most of us, you know, in, like, white-collar jobs work on the internet. So the reason to be in the office is not necessarily to actually do the work together, but it's mostly to socialize and do, like, some meetings. And I thought about it, and I understood that there are some other ways to achieve it. And I understood that, ultimately, like, it's going to come down to flexibility. You know, a lot of employees want flexibility. A lot of employees want the flexibility to work from home, or the flexibility to pick up their kids, or the flexibility to travel. And I think this is extremely important. But even if I think about it from like the employer standpoint, I think employers also want flexibility. They want flexibility. For example, if you're now starting a company in Toronto, you don't necessarily want to just get an office rent immediately after you started the company. It's obviously a lot of money. You can start working on the internet. You don't necessarily want to hire person from the city, because maybe the best person for the job is not in the city. Maybe the best person for the job is in India or in South Africa. So I think remote work, or like, or distributed work or flexible work provide a lot of flexibility for both sides, both the employee and the employer as well. And this made me think that there might be something here that's going to be very strong even post-COVID, which I think is kind of like proven to be. And I think, you know, there's like all this discussion about return to office, and like employers and like employees are like arguing about like the number of days. And I think we're going to continue seeing it for sure. But like, I think in the end of the day, I think there are some companies that would prefer in person, some companies would prefer hybrid, some companies would prefer flexible work. But I think the number of companies that prefer more like remote work is going to increase, because essentially it's just like a phenomenon that is driven by the internet and by distributed work. So this made me think that like this trend is not going to go away. And now I kind of like started ideating, okay, if this trend is not going to go away, like, what can we build here? You know, like, I'm Israeli, like, all of us like are in startup. We kind of like all the time like have this startup pitch, I guess. And I kind of saw that like one of the interesting things that happened for like remote work is a lot of offsites, a lot of meetings that I would say like are kind of like the team is like spread across different countries, across different continents. And they come together a few times a year to meet in a more intentional, purposeful way. It's like a usually like a week. It has like an agenda. It has like a clear agenda. It has like stakeholders that are involved. And it's also very time consuming and very complicated to organize this meeting. And I thought, okay, if remote work is going to become a mass phenomenon, if a lot of companies are going to do remote work in a proper way, then also a lot of companies would want to bring their employees together, because bringing teams together and bringing employees together, and it's also like backed by the research, is boosting performance, is boosting the motivation. And this boost can last for 4 or 5 months after the offsite. And I didn't really see any platform that really provides this one-stop shop to organize offsites, to organize team events that are like more focused on the experiences. There are platforms that focus on team building events like in the city. If you want, like, for example, to do, I don't know, like a VR, like a virtual reality or cooking class or whatever. But it was really hard to find something that can actually help you book an event that is very complicated, very time consuming. Yeah, you can maybe use like Expedia or like Booking to find like an hotel, but still you need to actually understand what's going to be the agenda. How are you going to get all the team together? Who is going to lead the sessions? How do you get an offsite facilitator? How do you get like a guest speaker? How do you get like the right team building activity to arrive at your accommodation? So all of these things are like a lot of like moving pieces, and there wasn't really a platform that was able to do it. I think there still isn't. I hope that we're going to be the first one to do it. And obviously it takes time to build, and like we're still early stage, but we are building the first, I would say like the first really self-serve platform to organize events in this scale. Again, it's a lot of like moving pieces. It's very complicated to actually make sure that all the people are going to show up in the same location in the same time, and everyone going to get their best experience, and the employer going to actually feel there's good return on investment. But I think we already have done a good progress since we launched last year. And we're, you know, excited to continue to grow. And we're actually planning to expand to New York in the next few months. So in the last year, we've been only active in Ontario because we wanted to figure out the kinks of the product in Ontario. And I think it's very important when you start a business to be focused, at least on something. I think you have to be focused on a lot of things, but I think you need to be focused on the product side. And in our case, you need to be also focused on the geographical part of it. because you can't just curate and vet thousands of vendors all over the globe, right? So we decided to start in Ontario, which is obviously a great place to start. And also we live here, so it's good. But now we feel it's like the time to expand to New York. And we're not going to expand just straight to the entire US, but like what we want to expand to New York. And we have already customers that we work in New York in the city for like different events outside of the city. So yeah, that's kind of like the long monologue, I would say, about Townish.
That's exciting.
Hey, Al, if only Roy was more passionate about what he was talking about. Eh? It's coming through the screen. You're just so passionate about what you're talking about. I love it. I love having these conversations because I get energy out of these conversations too. It's just awesome.
Yeah, I think it's mutual. You guys are also like very passionate about it. It's very easy to see it as well. So
very cool.
Next time we'll do it in person. Yeah.
Yes. We'll organize an event.
Yeah.
We know who will take the lead.
Exactly. Yeah.
Roy, can you talk about your startup? This is something fairly recent that you've done. Can you talk about any successes you've had so far? Anything stand out?
I think one of the major successes that we have is we almost don't need to prove there's like demand. You know, like when you start a new startup, it's very sometimes like, it's kind of like binary. Is it going to work or is it not going to work? And I think for us, it's not exactly this, because if you think about it, like it's almost like recruiter. We see the clear demand for event planning for offsites and events. Same like recruiter see that there's like demand for like hiring employees. And the challenge for us is not actually getting the demand, is just to productize it. And I say just, but it's obviously not as simple as that. But I think for us, the biggest challenge is like actually productizing a service that there's a clear demand for. And the bottleneck for building it is not necessarily the bottleneck of getting the demand or like understanding if there's a problem. I think it's fairly clear that there is a problem here. The challenge is kind of like the commercial bottleneck, I would say. So like, how do you scale to different geographies? How do you find the best vendors or like partners in different geographies? How do you distribute all of your knowledge to different clients in different regions? I think this is the major challenge. So the way it kind of like connects the question about the success is that we've done a lot of like events in Ontario. We've done a lot of events with clients. I would probably say that like we generated more revenues than like the average startup generates in the first year of life. We actually launched probably 10 months ago. So we generate more revenue, I think, in the first 10 months of a business, especially as we kind of like limit ourselves only to Ontario. So companies from Ontario that wanted to do events outside of Ontario, we couldn't work with them. And companies that wanted to do events outside of Ontario in general, like, you know, friends or like people that know about the business from like LinkedIn or from other content creation, we also like, we kind of like rejected a lot of businesses. I don't know if you call it a success, but rejection of businesses. But like, I think it is kind of success because it shows the need. It shows that once we solve this like bottleneck, we're going to get more businesses in these regions. So yeah, maybe the easiest way to answer the success question is that we actually rejected more revenues than we actually took. And yeah, we've done a bunch of like events in Ontario. Like we work with like clients on like offsites, 1 day offsite to like 3 day offsite that are like add like more experimental part of them that like we're engaging. We brought guest speakers. We brought people that like speak about AI or speak about product management or speak about product development or like speak about a lot of like different aspects. We connected them with like team building activities like cooking classes or like art workshops or different activities that are more engaging. And we built these kind of like packages and we build them very like manually as kind of like event organizers. But as we go forward, we productize in the way we build the services. And we try to incorporate different aspects of enhancement of the company culture. So like it's very much focused, I would say, like on three different pillars. One of them is fun, because if people meet, they want to have fun usually. And the second is team building, which is kind of like overlaps with fun, but there is some differences there. And the third is work, because what we've realized is that like the companies that don't have an office and that meet each other once a quarter, they usually, when they meet together, they also want to work. They want to work on like the more strategic items. So they want, like, for example, to build the roadmap for the next quarter. They want to like speak about the KPIs for the next year. They want to speak about maybe about like the budget, about the plans. So I think like we were successful in incorporating these three pillars into one product, which is the experience. And now I think able to scale it to other geographies.
So Roy, you could have stayed in finance, which might have been a safer career. Why did you move into startups? What was it about that world that you wanted to get into?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I love finance, by the way. Like I've been probably investing for the past, since I was 15 years old, probably. I remember like my dad used to get the daily newspaper and I used to open like the sports section and the finance section. This is like the thing that I was interested in, even when I was like very young. So for me, it was like, you know, very clear that I'm going to go to finance. So I did my bachelor's degree in economics, MBA in finance as well. And I started my career in M&A advisory, financial analysis, valuations of companies, very much consulting job, financial consulting job. And I've been there for like more than 2 years. And I would say I enjoyed most of it because it was intellectually challenging, intellectually stimulating, I would say. It was interesting to meet different people from like different fields. I was consulting to people from like the retail industry. I was consulting for the people from like the tech industry. Like it was very interesting for someone that just graduated to kind of like taste different industries and like see what's out there. But what I didn't really like was that we met a company, we started a project. This was like usually a few weeks of a project, sometimes like a few months. But then after like a few months or like a few weeks, you kind of like move to the next client. You kind of forget about what you did. You don't even know if what you did was actually helpful in any way. And I felt like we're not really building anything. And, you know, I lived in Tel Aviv back then. Tel Aviv is like very vibrant tech city or like startup city. And most of my friends were back then already working for startups. And I was kind of like excited. Every time I spent time with them, I learned what they do. Like I was excited about like the feeling of actually building something from scratch, almost taking something from like an idea and making it real and making it like a product. And I think I always like thrived in the chaos, I guess. I was excited by this feeling that like this can actually happen in real life. I think startup in general is a new phenomenon that like something that happened like in the last 50 years, startup that like actually backed by VCs, which there's a lot of like pros and cons for this phenomenon and like this trend. I think a lot of people don't really know how to run actual businesses because of VC money. But it's also like a lot of excitement because you grow quickly, you manage to hire a lot of employees, you manage to like build different products, you manage to actually execute on a vision in a very quick and fast way. So this was exciting for me and I decided to pursue my startup career and I joined a startup in Tel Aviv, which was a startup in the field of image processing, very early stage. And I joined in a position that like back then it wasn't called like this because I think this position almost didn't exist back then. But it was, I would say, like chief of staff. So like the person near the CEO and spearheading like everything that has to do with the operations, the HR, the finance, like everything that has to do with not actually building the product, I would say. So this was fun, but this startup actually wasn't very successful. I've been there like 2 years. It was one of these startups that like is not really dying, but like it's really hard for them to grow. For many reasons that, by the way, I didn't understand before I started because I was new to this industry. And if I known these reasons, I probably wouldn't choose the startup, but I didn't know that it's not the most smart thing to sell to governments. We sold to governments. I didn't understand the importance of the ability to charge your clients quickly and pay your vendors late, which was, it's funny because I came from finance, but I didn't really understand that this is can happen also like with startups if they sell to government. So this startup like really became more like a service company. We kind of like served governments in a way, and we didn't really build product because every project was like very big project. So we kind of like, okay, we did like a project with the state of California. Okay, so we built this project. It was like a few millions of dollars, but it was really hard to take this product and actually extrapolate or like apply to like to other states or apply to other countries. So back then I understood like really, you know, like the importance of not just like following any customer. Like you need to really be careful about the customers you choose because some of the customers you choose are going to make the business probably very different than what you thought when you started this business. I obviously wasn't a founder. So for me, I could leave at any point. And then my wife wanted to do her MBA abroad. And then we decided to move to Toronto. And this was the reason for me to leave and join Plotted, which I mentioned before.
It really resonates with me about building something, wanting to build something. We did it as partners. We did it in 2005 when we launched our first brand. And then we did it again at the end of 2017 when we launched the Aria brand. And I printed out in our office, if you come by the office, and hopefully you will, Roy, at some point we can have a coffee together.
Yeah.
On our billboard, or on the corkboard, sorry, I printed out the logo for Aria. And I had said, this started as a dream.
Yeah.
Because that really resonates with something, something that comes out of someone's imagination, their mind. And now when I'm looking around the company, and the building that we're in is completely full. We're almost out of space. And I'm thinking this all started with just having conversations. Hey, it would be great to do this. And I was very fortunate to have business partners where our vision, although it's evolved over time, we've always gone in the same general direction. So I feel very fortunate with that. But along the way with doing this, and I'd love to get your take on this in the startup space. And Al, I will credit Al with coaching me through this because I was very nervous and it pertained to risk. And it was about hiring that next person and then hiring that next person and then giving up a little bit of control and hiring that next person. And it's all worked out really well. But the first time I had to do that, that risk was very scary for me. I'd love to know in your mind, how do you think about risk in your business or in life in general?
Yeah, it's a big question. In general, I think we're going through some cultural change, I think, when it comes to the workforce, but when it comes to like to life and technology in general. And I think in life, it's almost like irresponsible not to take risk because their careers and like career trajectory and life and like the work life trajectory has changed so much. You know, like when my parents, you know, when they started their career, they could definitely see a path to like to working 40 years in the same role, in the same career. I think when someone today like starts their career when they're like in the early 20s, it's almost impossible. It's almost impossible to even envision like what the world going to look like in 10 years. So I think it doesn't mean that like you cannot get like a solid job, work for like a bank or work for, I don't know, like an insurance company. But it means that I think that you need to keep developing and on your skills and like really prepare for the time that you're going to be probably replaced. And by the way, I don't think it's only AI. I think, you know, it's like we spoke about like the distributed work. I think there's a lot of competition with like offshore talent for like many jobs. I think that there's a lot of competition with AI, obviously, that AI is probably going to disrupt a few people. And I think it's also with the tech tools and with the software tools that like we've built along the last 20 years, I think it's much easier to build a business. And I think you've seen today so many more solopreneurs. So you've seen so many like startups that were like five people or startups that don't really necessarily want to go the VC route because they don't need VC money. Ultimately, I think we're going to get to a point where there will be less employees in the world and more business owners. And I think it's just going to be the nature of like the way technology changed the world, where it's like very easy to run a one-person business from everywhere in the world. I still think the physical world is going to exist, and I hope it's going to exist. But I think also like in the physical world, like you will probably need less employees because maybe you're going to have like robots or like other types of help that you're going to get from technology. So I think in general, like it's fine not to take risks, but it's important to know that like you might need to take risks at some point. So you need to prepare yourself for this and not be like in a mental crisis when it happens, when you get laid off because technology disrupted you. So that's like kind of like my opinion about work in general, the workforce in general, about townish and risk taking. So the way I think about it is that like the easiest way to start a business, like a startup business, and I have a lot of friends that are like just preaching this approach, is doing like a me too kind of like approach, which means that like, okay, something works for like some other company, let's replicate it and like sell it, and it's probably going to work for us. So I try to do the opposite almost. I try to really build like something that is going to be nascent. I don't think, by the way, like I'm the only person thinking about these ideas. There are several companies that started around the same time I started because they understood that like the work has changed and like this is like a business opportunity. But I, even though I know exactly what they do, but I try to not really occupy myself with this because I don't want even like to build something that's like similar to what they do. So even if they're like VC funded companies or even if they started 2 years before me, I still want like to build my own thing. I'm trying to be very much focused on the customers, but very much not focused on the competition. Because I think ultimately, like we want to build something that the customers would want to use. And I think part of the risk taking is really building something that is like nascent, is new, and something that's going to be something that like people look at it and going to say, okay, it's not the same thing that like we've seen before. This is probably going to work. And I think this is kind of like the idea of like risk taking, because there's a lot of like event organizers, obviously, but we don't want to be like another event organizer. We want to build something that is really something that like any team lead can use it for like booking their event in a very easy, frictionless way. And it's risky because it's like, it's risky to build it. Like it's risky to build it, like because we don't know if it's going to succeed. It's much easier to just organize events. But we're spending time on this, we're spending money. I think we're spending, I would say like our most important resource in life is probably the mental resource. So most of our brain capacity doesn't go to sales or doesn't go to marketing or doesn't go to operations because our processes that you can really build and operationalize. And it's once you build them, it's like easier to like just follow the path. But like the most of the mental capacity goes to product development. And we could have just decided like, okay, we don't really need to build any product. We can just organize events and it's probably a good and solid business that can be very profitable. But we want to actually build a product that really answer the needs of the future of the workforce. And this requires a lot of like mental capacity. And this is like, I would say like the risk taking for us is really like the, yeah, it's time, it's money, but like it's really the mental risk in a way.
Hey, Roy, I want to swing back to something you said a little bit earlier and just delve a little bit further into, because you said, you used the phrase, I thrive on chaos.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that's a conversation that Robin and I were having just a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, I guess a two-part question. Number one, why do you think that is, that you thrive on chaos? Number two, do you think that's something that's important for someone who's beginning a startup?
I start with the second one because it's probably the easiest.
Okay.
Yeah, I think startups are chaotic. I think when you start something, you have this idea of how you want it like to look like, how the product going to be built. And then the first day you're starting to sell it and you understand like everything kind of like changes, right? If you like, for example, like, I don't know, you were like an event organizer, for example, and now you want like to build another agency for like event organization, then yeah, like it's probably going to be the same in a way. But still, like if you build a startup, if you build a tech product, then like building a tech product, I would say like the art part is not the engineering side of it, I think, in my opinion. For like most products, for some products, yes. The art part is like actually how to distribute the product to get to like many people and how to productize it in a way that these people are going to be able to actually convert and use the product. And this is like very, very challenging and very hard. And I think because it's very challenging and very hard, it's very chaotic because things all the time change. You have to try different things because it's very rare that you're going to be successful in the first experiment that you do. And also like you bring a lot of like smart people to the team and every smart person has three different opinions. So it's becoming like a very intellectually challenging process to run this in this chaos. And I think a lot of people just cannot do it. A lot of people cannot deal with like the frequent changes. A lot of people cannot deal with that every day looks different. I think Jeff Bezos has this quote that when you build a startup, you need to be very adamant about the vision, but very flexible about the details of how to get to the vision. So I think it's the same for us. Like we never changed our vision, but we changed so many of the details. And I think me and my co-founder, like we're very good with dealing with this, but I know that like so many people are not. And so many people are not good with like the dealing with like the uncertainty of it. And I think it's tough. And I think, why am I good with this? It's a very good question because I think there's probably something genetic here, which it's hard for me to answer. But I'm sure there's also something environmental. I think growing up in Israel, I think, you know, in the startup scene in Israel is very strong. Probably 12% of the population work for like tech in general, and a big part of them work for like startups. So it's definitely something that I see in the environment. I think one thing in Israel and also in San Francisco, and I think it's starting to be in Toronto as well, but something that you don't really see like in Japan or like other countries. If you fail, nothing happens. People look at it like you kind of like sprain your ankle, right? Like when are you back to the game? So I think it's a lot about the culture like and the country that you live in, that Israel and Canada as well, and definitely like the Valley are very much like super adamant about, like the failure is just like a step in a way. And I think for me, I'm just excited by the adrenaline. I'm like, I like to work under pressure. I like to work with like our deadlines, honestly. I like to kind of like build something very quickly. I never was one of these people that like to work 9 to 5. I always like to stay late in the office if I had something to do and like build things from scratch. But if I actually had to leave at 5, if I didn't anything to do at 5, I would probably become depressed. And I don't think it's healthy, by the way. I think, you know, people need to prioritize their life and like work-life balance. But I think work-life balance is very individual for anyone. And like, I just love to work hard and like build things. And, you know, even like at Thriver, like Platters, like I've done a lot of things that I've never done before. Like I joined the company. A lot of the functions didn't exist yet. And other functions, I didn't really know how to build them. But I just, okay, I went online. I started researching. How do you build like talent acquisition function? Okay, I started poaching people on LinkedIn when we needed to grow. And then I hired like the first person to manage the team. Then we scaled the team. Same with like any type of other department, like with the finance team, with the data team, with like sales operations team. Also with the sales and customer success, I worked very closely. So I'm always excited by the fact that like waking up in the morning and not knowing how you're going to end up the day in a way. And I think this is something that like is very, I think it sounds appealing to a lot of people, but what I've noticed in real life is that most people actually don't like it. Most people, and this is maybe like more like, you know, psychological topic, but I think a lot of people crave for like freedom, but they don't necessarily want freedom. A lot of people do want like something to make the hard decisions for them because making decisions is very hard. So I think that like a lot of people would tell you, yeah, we want like extreme freedom. We want to be able to do a lot of like different things, but they actually do want some kind of like structure. And I think good companies are the ones that like able to provide both. Like they provide you the good structure to grow and like to build new things. But sometimes like the early stage startups don't really provide you this structure. They just tell you, okay, do it. And then you're like, you're just off to the races and like, you just don't know what to do. And this is like where I think I love it, but most people don't.
Well, there was a lot of good information there. And again, I'll pick out one thing that you said. And again, because this is something actually, Robin, this is one of our little signs that hangs outside your door pretty close. You talked about failure. And one of the things we've got posted in our office is failure is simply success in progress.
Totally. 100%. It becomes like almost like a cliche now that people talking about overnight success that took 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, you just said it, like you started dreaming in like 2005, right? And it takes time to build a business. It takes time to achieve things, to achieve great things. It takes time to build a brand, to build a customer base, and definitely to build a product. A lot of like people are like starting startups and they expect instant gratification, but like yes. In real life, it doesn't happen. Not in tech startup, but also not like in service businesses.
Roy, it reminds me of a saying that I really like, and it is true because I even thought things would happen faster with Aria, and the reality is they don't. And it's most people overestimate what they can achieve in a year and underestimate what they can achieve in a decade.
Yeah.
And I've always loved that. Roy, I'm so glad we got an introduction to you because I loved our first conversation. I love this conversation even more, and I'm looking forward to future conversations. We've arrived at the point of the podcast where Al has his signature question, and I'm going to turn it over to him.
So here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
The way I see it, and I think a lot of like businesses and a lot of like people think about like what happens if they fail. I like to think about like what happens if I'm successful. There's probably less probability for success than like to fail, but this is why we live here. And I think we live in the world of like bets and risk taking. And I think if I'm successful, if we're successful, me and Cam, then we get to a point that in probably 5 to 10 years, every team in the world can use us to bring the team together and to bring the team together in a way that is intentional, in a way that is like purposeful, in a way that is engaging and like actually boosting their performance and motivation to work together and to bridge their differences and cultural differences. And we want to be able to do it at scale worldwide and really build the best self-serve frictionless platform to do it. And I think if you're like a team of 50 people, or like 100 people, or like 20 people or whatever, and you're like now an HR person, or like a finance person, or a business operations person, or whatever, and you want to like to bring your team together, we want to be able to actually give you the template for doing it in the best way that already worked for like thousands of teams, the same way, the same vibe, the same structure, the same characters of people, because we already generated this data. Like we know who are the best partners and vendors to work with for doing it and really replicating success across different cities, countries, regions, and continents.
Thanks for that, Roy. That's a great answer. And I've got to say that throughout this whole conversation, you've given us a lot to think about and a lot of ideas. And I think people will really be able to relate, especially people who are starting out like you with some startups, some new ideas. So I think it's been a great conversation to hear your story today.
Likewise.
Yeah, it really has. Well, Roy, thanks for joining us today. And thank you for sharing your journey. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at Townish?
So it's going to be like either LinkedIn or my email, which is roy@townish.ca. This is the best way. I'll do my best to answer everyone, especially if they're a potential customer, but not only. But yeah, I'd love to hear from anyone. And it was really great to be here and spend the morning with you guys.
Yeah, it's been great. Well, that does it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Hopefully you can tell we did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. And always remember, success leaves clues, my friends.